Chö gyö rö nyi bë sö nön gyö rö lö bë jë sö gyö rö bë rö shö.
Let us cultivate the altruistic motivation, seeking complete enlightenment for the sake of liberating infinite kind mother sentient beings. With that kind of bodhicitta motivation, that we should all participate in this teaching. I believe that all of us would like to be free from suffering as well as causes of suffering. I think it is important for us to reflect on different types of suffering. We could talk about general suffering of samsara or cyclic existence and the specific or particular sufferings in different states of cyclic existence. Generally speaking, everywhere in samsara or cyclic existence, we can talk about three realms of existence. We can talk about six types of sentient beings or migrators in samsara. But what is common to all of us is what we call pervasive suffering or extensive suffering. It doesn't matter where we are in any part of samsara, we all experience what is called pervasive suffering. Khyawa duje gi dungya in Tibetan. And there are other two types of suffering. That is what we call suffering of change and suffering of misery. Again, most of sentient beings in samsara, we do experience these other forms of suffering as well. Now, when we go into specific sufferings in different states of samsara, then we can talk about how hell beings, they have intense suffering of heat and cold. And predators or hungry ghosts have suffering of starvation, hunger and thirst. And animals in the animal world have suffering due to what we call close-mindedness, for lack of a better translation, not being able to really, communicate what they really wanted. So there are those different specific or particular kinds of suffering beings experience in samsara.
Ta tani ani ta re ni ani tal mila ani sigan na chu dungi ani lama ina ta chu gu dungi ani la la kim kimpo kimpo da dungi dungi kimpo dungi dungi ta tani you are this.
And then we human beings in samsara, we have our own particular sufferings, if you will. We go through the suffering of birth, aging, sickness, and death. And in the divine realm of existence, or the divine or celestial beings, they have a particular kind of suffering, which is as they near death, then they started to see the signs indicating that the death is very imminent. It is just coming soon near you, as I would say. And so then they know exactly where they are going to be reborn, which really is not a, you know, a happy knowledge, because when you know you're not going to be in a good state, that's a terrible suffering divine beings have. And then there are the asuras, or the demigods. Well, their particular suffering is to do with always getting defeated, or most of the time, at least, by the divine beings. So they're always in the war with, in combat with the divine beings, and then they get defeated have that kind of suffering. The point I'm trying to get across to you is this, that in samsara or cyclic existence, we can talk about three unfortunate states of rebirth, or three bad migration, and three fortunate states of rebirth, or three good migration, but it does not matter where we are in samsara or cyclic existence. We are bound to experience suffering or problems. So what that really tells us, what we should know, is this, that being in samsara, we do not experience true happiness, true lasting peace and happiness. It doesn't matter which part of samsara we are in, that we bump into, we go through suffering and problems.
That legend was so that Kowe nela ma nduzi king shakwanda this karing mid hakogres.
So if that is our situation or condition in samsara, then we would definitely like to know, you know, what has got us here, and you know, who or what is really binding us within samsara or cyclic existence.
That deal any the seven the charity king yours.
So a binding factor that is quite dominant is what we call an attachment. What really binds us to samsara, or keeps us within samsara, is what we call sepa. You know, it can be craving, or it is attachment in a generic sense. Manjushri Lama Tsongkhapa, who is also known as Jerimuche, in his very wonderful prayer by the name of Tepa Purjung, excellent supplication, as Geshe-la quoted the lines from his memory, which he says that, basically beings are, bound within the prison of samsara by, that deluded desire or attachment.
That thing, then, that sebe jansu ko naal endu cinema, thinking kita yores, the hakwagores.
So in other words, we really want to know that we can use other metaphors, like samsara is like an ocean, and what has thrown us into this ocean of samsara?
That thing. Pa yendale samtong yamas rang jile yepe letang yamoni bit chagyares.
So in order to find answer to that question, what has precipitated me into this ocean of samsara? Of course, we cannot, point our finger at others, You know, it's, as it, the causes are out there somewhere. You know, we really need to look inwardly and look within our own state of mind, if you will, and understand that it is one's own contaminated karmic actions and delusions, you know, which are responsible for our being in the samsara.
So the tangaran chita, kichiyu karasigana, kowe neil pa targu re te tava shabala letang yamoni buta pangu res.
So what we're really seeking, and this, which is very important for us, is we want to be free from samsara. We do not want to be in samsara. We want to get out of samsara. So that means to get out, what we really need to do is we need to break this bondage, you know, of contaminated karmic actions and delusions.
So that,
or to use another metaphor, we need to find out what are the binding factors. You know, we can use the metaphor of a lasso, you know, that binds us in samsara. So in order to be free, we need to really break this bondage, right? And so we need to know what are the binding factors. So if deluded attachment is that which binds us within samsara, and we want to cut off this tie with a delusion, then what kind of a tool or a weapon do we need? Of course, we cannot go and, you know, manufacture, you know, some kind of a sword or a weapon, you know, that we could use to cut off this tie we have with attachment. Yeah, so the blacksmith cannot make a sword or a weapon that can help us to cut off the tie. We definitely need a very sharp weapon. So if we can speak in terms of metaphor, we do need a very sharp sword to cut off this link or the tie we have with attachment. Then who need to manufacture or make this sword, if you ask? Then answer is myself, me. I got to do it.
No.
So you cannot go and shop around. You know, you just cannot go on a shopping, you know, go to the mall and say, okay, I want that kind of a sword. So if it's something you can buy with dollars, then of course the rich people have advantage, definitely, right? So they can spend all the money and, you know, buy such a tool.
Rakapali goes first.
No. So rich will get out first out of samsara.
So that's the rest.
So as I said, I need to, you know, if you will, metaphorically speaking, I need to, you know, produce or make that, manufacture that sword, you know. So now the question is, how do I do that? What kind of a sword am I talking about that I need to manufacture?
Okay. Well, Never. Unless that nigga,
So the, I mean, I of course use the metaphor. We need to manufacture a very sharp, you know, sword to cut our tie with attachment. But what kind of a sword are we talking about? You know, we are talking about the, you know, the sort of wisdom that realizes selflessness, right? Realization of selflessness is the kind of weapon, it's the kind of sword that we need to manufacture.
Mm-hmm.
So how can we cultivate the wisdom realizing selflessness, if you ask? Of course, it's nice to pray, but praying is not enough, you know. Or maybe you think that we can recite some mantras. Mantra recitation alone will not do it. So what we really need to do is we need to, you know, understand what is self-grasping and how do we grasp at self to exist. But we really need to understand, you know, we have a self-grasping attitude, if you will, and in what way do we grasp at self to exist?
Yes. So, sir,
So in other words, that you know, self-grasping has kind of deluded us. You know, we are seeing the things in a wrong fashion, if you will, and it's called the wrong view. It's the distorted view. When we grasp at existence of self, that is the wrong view, and to get rid of it, you know, we need to cultivate the wisdom realizing selflessness. In order to do that, we need to use the best kind of what we call reasoning, and that's why we need to use what is called the reasoning of dependent arising, right? Or pratisamutpat in Sanskrit. Right? We need to use the reasoning of dependent arising in order to understand how things really or actually exist. So without relying upon the reasoning of dependent arising, there's no way for us to realize the meaning of profound emptiness. As great Indian master Acharya Chandrakirti states in his Madhyamik Avatar or Supplement to the Middle Way, and again Geshe-la quoted the lines from his memory, and he said that with the reasoning of dependent arising, we can cut through that network of you know, distorted views or the wrong perceptions. So as we you know, approach what is called emptiness as the ultimate nature or reality of phenomena, so first thing we want to kind of tell ourselves, everything that exists is empty of inherent existence. Yeah. And then, excuse me, and then we said, okay, how? And how is that? And how is everything empty of inherent existence? What good reason do we have, you know? And that's why, you know, we started to see the link here of dependent arising.
So that the language, madhubai yinbi, karresana, junse karresana, tenjung tenjung dependent junga rendu was.
So everything that exists, we call phenomenon, is empty of inherent existence because it is dependent arising, or it has dependently arisen. Okay, so we use dependent arising, tendo, pratisamutpat, as a reasoning to verify, you know, the existence of something. Okay, So now, what does dependent arising mean? Of course, it has many levels of meaning or understanding, if you will. Perhaps the most common understanding of dependent arising is something, you see, produced depending upon its causes and conditions. In other words, causes and conditions produce things. So such things are dependently existent. They are dependent arising. That's a common understanding, right? But then there are phenomena which are not produced by causes and conditions. They do not have causes and conditions, but they do exist. Okay? So how is that kind of phenomena dependent arising? We got to understand. Well, here, then we have a different level of understanding of dependent arising, which means things are, you see, relatively existence. You can posit the existence of something in relation to something else. Okay, right? So that is also what we call another understanding of dependent arising, right? Something is not produced by causes and conditions, but something exists because something else exists. In reference to something else, in relation to something else, that thing could exist.
Okay? Dujie rātta mātun dhimāshin ni kita trūpis. Dujie dhimāshin tēn ni kia, dhimāshin dujie rātta ni kia, tēn ni kia pārēs. Tēn ni trūpa sētā, trūtān tūs pārēs.
Buddhist literatures, of course, we use many different systems of classifications of phenomena. So sometimes we talk about produced phenomena or composite phenomena. The Tibetan term is dujie, literally means produced, composed. Right? And these phenomena, composite phenomena, are produced by their causes and conditions. Okay? But then there are unproduced phenomena or non-composite phenomena, dumache in Tibetan. Okay? Now these kind of phenomena are not produced by causes and conditions, and they could not have been. Okay? Yet they exist. Okay? And as it is stated in Mulya Madhyamika, or the Fundamental Wisdom Treatise, as Geshe-la quoted the lines from his memory, the question arises is that these two types of phenomena are related to each other. So then the master asks the question, without produced phenomena, how could there be unproduced phenomena, and vice versa? See, that shows the relativity, the relationship between produced and unproduced phenomena. Because one cannot exist without the other.
Rangi trip in a trip and Gugamas. Good. Until Dilla Matu again. But Rangi Yungo with it and Madam.
If something exists inherently, if something is inherently existent, then it does not need to rely on anything else. It doesn't have to, it doesn't care. Okay? It should be able to exists independently on its own feet, so to speak. Okay? But there's no such thing.
So that is it. Then the lay have to say, I'm not going to say that. The Rimbuti Yajan as a type, Yang Yarma, Rimbuti Yang. The Rimbuti Yayat, Tunga Latin Yavramato, Tunga Mena, Rimbuti Yayama, Riskana.
Maybe this might come a little easier for you to understand. As great Nagarjuna in his precious garland, Ratna Avali, talks about. And one of the examples given is like when we talk about, tall and short, or long and short, whichever way you want to go to, right? Without short, we can't talk about long or tall. Without tall, we can't talk about short, because these things are posited in relation to each other. Okay?
That chamber the chunju pajak, Susan or Tonda. Chamber the chunju yate, chamber latin, chunju yate, chunju latin, chamber yago with the wasps.
So now we can kind of expand this notion of understanding to other phenomena, right? When we talk about big and small, what is big and small, right? When we look at something bigger, then you say, okay, this is small, right? But maybe this is big if you compare to another smaller one. So what is big and small can only be posited relatively in relation to something else.
Yes.
The same thing with good and bad, right? Without bad, we can't talk about good, you know? Without good, we can't talk about bad. So good and bad are, again, posited in relation to each other. So the point I'm trying to make here is that we could only talk about good in relation to bad. We can talk about bad in relation to good, right? If there is no such thing as good, then there can't be bad, and vice versa, right? There's no such thing as good and bad that exists in and of itself.
So
Arya Nagarjuna raises this question, and he said, without produced or composite phenomena, how could there be unproduced or non-composite phenomena? So by that, what he's really saying is, it's just impossible. So what I'm really trying to explain here is that there are different levels of understanding of dependent arising, right? So that's what I'm trying to tell you. So I'm trying to explain to you, you know, what are the different understanding, levels of understanding of dependent arising, and how is dependent arising used as a reasoning to establish the ultimate nature of phenomena. There isn't any phenomenon that is not dependent arising, that does not exist dependently. So as it is stated elsewhere, again Geshe quoted the lines from his memory, he said, there isn't anything that is not dependent arising, right? So therefore, there isn't anything that is not emptiness, okay? See, so there isn't anything that is not dependent arising, so therefore, there isn't anything that is not emptiness. So that shows the connection between dependent arising and emptiness, right? Everything is dependent arising, everything is emptiness, okay? So we all need to understand that there isn't anything that is truly existent, Dhambadrupa, that is inherently existent, Rangshinjidrupa. I know there are some people, you know, who are trying to learn Tibetans, so I'm just throwing those words here, right? So there's no such thing, a phenomenon that is truly existent, that is inherently existent. But we really have to be very careful, you know, to understand what is meant by there isn't anything that is truly existent, right? By that, we should not conclude, you know what? So this means there's no such thing as truth, you know? And there is nothing truly existent. Don't make that kind of a generalization or assumption, you know, because that's not the meaning of what we call what it means to be non-true existence, you know. If things don't exist truly, still they do exist. So the point is that even though there is no phenomenon that exists truly from its own side, however, there are phenomena which exist, and how do we posit the existence? How should we understand it, you know? Because they are dependently existent.
Okay.
No. So let me also say this, that when we say that there isn't anything that is inherently existent, okay, that exists in and of itself, we do not mean to say that there's no such thing as what you love to call nature, right? I love nature, the wildflowers, the mountains, and the snows, and the waterfalls, and all that, right? You say, oh, so now things are not, you know, inherent. So that means this nature don't exist. We are not saying that, okay? So because they have different meaning, you know, non-inherent existence does not mean there are no natures.
So that that thing, that some of the Rīpa māmbu chepa māmbu sēne rāngi kārāsa tōmi tōmpa ni tō gōgā mātō tāne tāne māshē bāche tākā sēne dō sēne ki jūnche tāne mēbē, jūnche tāne jūnche tōa nē dē mātō bā sēne rāngi jīpē tōmpa ni tō e kīyā mārāsa tī.
You know, in order to realize, understand emptiness, we need to do investigation and analysis. That means we need to think a lot. We need to use a lot of reasoning mind. Okay? We cannot kind of a sit in a blank state of mind, like I'm okay meditating on emptiness, so don't think about anything, you know. That doesn't work. To understand emptiness, it involves analytical meditation, analytical reasoning. Mind uses reasons to understand what emptiness is.
That's the thing, Mambo Chema Moshe, Demba Tuna Tig to Tugun, Tadi Tugun, Tadi, Cheva Moshe, in a time, Tandangi Hubert Chanso, Elabuki Tone, some that don't have ways to do this.
No. Of course, in the Buddhist authentic literatures, there are many variety of reasons given in order to understand what emptiness is. So that's why when, you know, you might have heard about, you know, if something exists truly, then it could exist in two ways. It has to be truly existent as a single entity, or a single phenomenon. Or it has to be truly existent as multiple phenomena. It has to be one or many, right? What other options are there if something exists? Well, the fact of the matter is, there's no such thing as true existence, you know. So I mean, there are so many reasons. Of course, we are not going to get into all those complex, you know, reasonings today.
Yes, I'm not going to say this. So she that so she mean card me mean very the sunny a thing I in San San King and they use thing the was.
Yes.
Better Christian dog dollars.
Yes.
Shall the was.
You know, when someone calls us by our name, whatever our name is, right? You know, we kind of feel like, you know, I'm here. That's kind of a solidified, you know, kind of a notion of I'm being called. You know, I'm over here. See?
No. Did you tell that to some Congress?
So at such moment, if somebody calls us by name, maybe it's a good, you know, moment to take, say, so who am I? You know, who is the person that other person is calling? You know, it's really nice to take an opportunity to find out that, if you will. So then we can go into all this like a minute detail analysis. Okay, somebody called me by name. Now I really want to find out who am I. Am I my hair, every strand of hair? Or am I this part of the body, that part of the body? Which we just go through the whole kind of a physical components of us and to find out where there's anything in it that is I. Okay, yeah. That's me. Okay, that is a meditation, right? We are doing analytical meditation here. So if we think that, you know, every part of me is really me, you know, my hair is me and my nose is me, whatever, right? But then the issue is when we get rid of certain parts of us, right? Maybe we cut off our hair. Well then, you know, where am I? You know, have I thrown myself out? You know, so you want to find out when we kind of a identify ourselves as every part of our body, then we got issues. See, that's a problem. So then, you know, we can probably use the modern knowledge here, right? We know maybe we go through the surgery, right? And when we do surgery, sometimes, you know, there are things removed from our part of the body, thrown away. Okay, how about that? Now, am I being thrown away somewhere, right? Because some organs are taken out and dumped, you know. So am I being dumped somewhere? See?
That So ji chimbe nga ji chimbe yang yin da zhen zhen dang dang nga mong bu cha yong ge.
And then you can, you know what? Yeah, that part of me down there, yeah, that's me too. But still there are many part of my body left. So I am here still, right? So that means I become multiple. You see, I is not more coherent single entity. It's just like I, too many eyes. You mean? So that's why in the Buddhist logic, we talk about there is the flaw in this logic that there are too many eyes or selves, you know, and that is a problem. So we go through that kind of analytical meditation, look at every part of the body, physical matters that constituted our body. And we said, you know what, kind of we get maybe smart, like, I can understand. None of this part of my body is me, you know. Okay, I got that right. How about my mind? Because body and mind are different. So then we might think that maybe the mind or certain part of the mind is me or I. So which means, you know, if we go by this assumption, if somebody calls us by our name, then we think that, oh, you know, that what that person means is my mind, you know, because that's real me. You know? So if we really go in a very kind of a very sort of a, you know, in some way funny, sort of humorous way, because the mind does not have arms, you know. So then I will be without arms, right? I have no hands, because mine does not have hands.
Without the head.
Well, I'm saying this like at a very sort of a, how should I say, very basic, simple matter. We say, you know, if mind is I, well, the mind does not have arms and legs and all these things. So that means I'm without arms and legs and all of that, right? Which gets a little strange and weird now. We know that. And now we get into a little subtle. We say, you know what? Mind has different states, you know? So which one is I? You know?
Okay.
So we can look at the different moments of our mind. Because our mind or consciousness is constituted by many moments of consciousness. Then we say, is it the preceding moment of my mind or consciousness that is me, or is it the subsequent moment that is me? Now, which one is it?
Same tagwa maris. Matapa res. Matapa insanita kichi kichi la chaki nreje la chaki chukishi yores. Tendeku pe jugu yores.
Mind is not a permanent phenomenon. It is an impermanent phenomenon, right? It is a transient phenomenon. So which means, like any other transient phenomenon, mind, it changes from moment to moment. In a split of a second, like as Geshe-la tried to demonstrate with snapping the finger, sometimes we can talk about 60 different instants within that split of a moment, see? So we can get into really minute details of the, you know, different moments of mind or consciousness.
Nanzi sekhem de parese kama ta de shin sekhem shin chen ne suko le chung 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 da ki ji thu chi ji kya yang ga ro ba de le chung ma ji ga de le thong ta mang bo ye de.
So in our kind of a world convention understanding, we see, we look at the time and so what? So we got only 1 second. Now that seems like almost nothing, right? For us, the shortest time. Well, we can really go even like there are much, many shorter moments than that in the second we talk about, that we understand.
So
again, if we think that, okay, the mind has many different states or parts, so if we think that each part of the mind is again me or I, well then again we've got the same problem here. There are too many I's or me, you know. Of course, I do not mean to confuse you by saying that as we do this analysis, so you know, we run into the problem of having to say that are many of me exists, you know. Of course, we really need to understand how does I or self exist, you know, but that's really important, you know, because I does exist.
dāngi tsēmā lā tākwē tā pā tāk ndō, dāngi tsēmā jī lē, pā anī mēng tā tōwē pā tākwā tsāmshī, tā tēnī ngā jī jāshū yu dōshī.
So if we ask, how does I or self exist? How do I exist? Right? The way I exist is I or self is a mere label that is labeled onto what we call a valid basis of labeling or imputation. I know I'm throwing so many things here, right? There's such thing as a basis upon which you put the label, and that basis has to be a valid basis of imputation. And then terms and concepts put a label onto that basis, and that's how I or self exists.
Pena mi, mi kele, pena mi chigi na ta ming kanti na che ming tele. Ane, ming te pata ke pares.
Yes.
So that the Tāsā kā yīti yāng tsēmā kī gōngu yōr mā tō sātā xīntā dōla tīndē shīnī kō tēkī sīyāndō tīrī mēng tājī mē dīyā rās.
For example, you know, we all have different names, right? And the names are given to us, right? They are labeled. They are just labels given to us, okay? But those labels work because we, you know, constitute the valid basis for those labels, right? So you can be called John, Mary, Tashi, Tenzin, whatever. But we can't go and call the trees and the rocks Tenzin and Tashi and Dundu, right? Because it doesn't work, you know? So that means we really need to pay more attention to what is valid basis of labeling or imputation. So in the authentic Buddhist text, it is mentioned that the basis in our case is constituted by what we called one of the five physical mental aggregates, skandhas, okay, constitute the valid basis for the label I or the self. Why do we say one, you know, not all of the five aggregates? Because we know that in the formless realm of existence, there is no form aggregate, form skandha, okay? So I or self is a mere label that is labeled onto a collection of one or many physical or mental aggregates. So let me again remind you, you know, well, what is the main point I'm trying to get across to you, right? All this explanation, you know. What I started off is that we all want to be free from samsara, right? We want freedom from samsara or cyclical existence. In order to be free, we need to cultivate the wisdom realizing selflessness. And we need to do that, right, to free ourselves. And so all the explanation I've been giving you is a part of how can we cultivate that wisdom, how can we meditate, you know, and do analytical meditation, if you will, to be able to understand the way in which self actually exists. I think that will do for today as prelude to return to our wonderful text. This text is called A Miscellaneous Collection of Kadamba Geshe's Personal Advices, and we will return to this text where we left off 2 weeks ago.
Jo kare nyame jo je ani ta lomenan ta yang don tembaki jesu ta konto onda kire ya no gihi poto alas geni tik ya ta kan chibre no gihi tik gihi poto ya fiyad dire chu tik to shawalas 걸 강체라 쉐베스 당 원에 돈이 그 넘버 답아지 드에 쉐발라 아니 가리 개치르스
대야
쉰도스
So here we begin with sort of a new question answer section. And the question was asked to a great Kadamba Geshe Podowa. And of course, Geshe Podowa was one of the great disciples of Dipankar Shirjan Atisha. Of course, his main disciple was Upasaka Domtamba, but then maybe the next would be Geshe Podowa. Okay, Geshe Podowa was a great Kadamba Geshe. And an Upasaka, meaning somebody with a layperson's vows, asked Geshe Podowa a question. He said, in order to practice purely Dharma, you know, tell me something that's really important. And Geshe Podowa said, you know, in order to really practice Dharma purely and most sincerely, meditating on impermanence is really important thing. So in what sense is meditating on impermanence really very important to practice Dharma purely, right? Are there any good reasons or not? And then here Geshe Podowa goes on to give many reasons. He said, at the beginning, or right in the beginning, if we meditate on impermanence, it really motivates us to get into Dharma. You know, meditating on impermanence is a great instigator, is a great motivator, you know, and it really motivates us into Dharma. So he says, you know, if I translate literally, he says, meditating on impermanence in the beginning is a real cause that gets you into Dharma, right? So now we want to take a little moment to understand this. What does that mean? So how is that, if we ask? Let me elaborate a little bit on this, that when we really sincerely meditate on impermanence and really understand it, then what we really started to see is that, you know, death is certain, right? There's nothing mystery about that. We are going to die for sure. But the time of death is uncertain. We don't know when we are going to die, okay? That's a big risk. But when it really strikes us, what can help us stand by us and what can help us into the next, you know, rebirth, if you will? Not except Dharma, nothing else works. We started to see all these things clearly. You know, we could be very successful in the world. You know, we have a lot of money, we have name, we have a family, we have friends, and you just name it. But when we die, nothing could really help us. Okay, we can't take anybody. So what could really stand by us at that difficult time is only if we have cultivated spirituality or Dharma. Right? Now we started to see why we really need to cultivate spirituality. That's why we get interested in cultivating spirituality.
So
So right in the beginning, if we really meditate on impermanence, it motivates us to get into Dharma. In the middle, as we are practicing, if you will, you know, it helps us to stay on course, if you will, right? So that we don't get distracted by a lot of other things, so that we don't get lazy, so that we don't get influenced by different types of laziness, different kinds of distractions. So in the middle, like meditating on impermanence or understanding impermanence, it helps us to succeed in our practice, because then we face less distractions and, you know, all of that, laziness. Then finally, at the end, it helps us to gain realizations, you know, especially emptiness, the ultimate nature of phenomena, right? In terms of emptiness, all phenomena are same, right? So that's why we talk about the equality of shunyi nyabanyi. In terms of the ultimate nature of phenomena, all of them are equal, same. Okay? So we're able to realize that ultimate nature of phenomena and also be able to realize other things such as bodhicitta or altruistic mind of enlightenment. So what Geshe Podhava is saying here about impermanence has some kind of a parallel notion to what great Indian master Acharya Chandrakirti states in his supplement to the Middle Way. Chandrakirti, right at the beginning of Madhyamika Avatar, you know, he makes supplication to the Great Compassion, Ma Karuna. Okay. And he gives us reason why he chose to supplicate to Great Compassion and, you know, nothing else. Okay. And he said that Great Compassion is very important in the beginning. It's just like the seed which gives rise to other realizations, especially bodhicitta. So just as seed is very important in the beginning to grow, to cultivate field, so is great compassion in the beginning. Great compassion in the middle is just like water and fertilizers and sunlight, right? Because once you sow the seeds need to be nurtured by water, by sunlight, by fertilizer, and so on. So great compassion, you know, it nurtures our practice. And finally, just as, you know, it is the harvesting time and we have the ripening of the fruits of the crops, great compassion, it gives us, it ripens, it fruitions into these other realizations, you know. So in the same way here, Geshe Podhava was talking about how realizing impermanence is important at the beginning, in the middle, and at
the end.
And then Geshe Podhava goes on to explain more about the importance of impermanence. And like when we talk about meditative impermanence, we should also understand that meditating on impermanence in a generic sense and meditating on death and dying as an impermanence are two different things. Okay? So even if we, understand impermanence in a genetic sense, we may not understand death and dying as an impermanence, okay, or vice versa. And now if we meditate on death and dying as an impermanence, and so what happens is, in the beginning, it says, that understanding of impermanence will help us to cut off our link to the concerns of this lifetime. Remember earlier I was talking about how our deluded attachment binds us to samsara or within samsara. So in order to be free from samsara, we want to cut off that link, right? And realizing impermanence in the beginning, it helps us, you know, in some way to move, you know, towards that goal. Okay. And Geshe was trying to explain to me, do I understand what Tretha is in Tibetan? You know, the Tibetan nomads, more so, you know, they use this piece of rope, you know, to tie their animals, it could be yaks or whatever, you name it, to a pole, okay? So that animal will sit put, right? So because that rope is connected to the pole. In the same way, you know, our deluded attachment is like that rope that binds us to samsara. If we want to be free, we need to break this rope. So of course we are not simply talking about intellectually understanding impermanence. We are really talking more understanding impermanence, of course, first intellectually, but then more at experiential level, right? What impermanence is really all about. Okay. So in the middle, that kind of experiential understanding of impermanence will help us to develop aversion to samsara or cyclic existence. Okay? It will help us to renounce samsara or cyclic existence. You know, then we won't be preoccupied and concerned with of this lifetime, nor would we be attached to the worldly things of the future lives. So it is in that way, the impermanence, experiential understanding impermanence will help us to develop renunciation or aversion to samsara.
And
lastly, in this particular section, that experiential understanding of impermanence will help us go beyond the state of suffering, that is to say, to find freedom from samsara, nirvana. Just to recapitulate what I explained right now is that once we have that experiential understanding of impermanence, that in the middle, it really helps us to cut off our attachment and clinging to the marvels of this lifetime, and also to cut off our attachment and clinging to the marvels of future lives. You know, so when we're able to do that, then you can see that we are developing aversion to samsara, cyclic existence. And that's how we find our way to liberation or nirvana. And again here, the experiential understanding of impermanence helps us, you know, to accomplish liberation. You know, in order to approach in impermanence and understand it intellectually and experientially and as through practice, First, maybe we start to deal with simple matters that we can easily relate to and understand impermanence. So we can relate to external phenomena such as how the seasons change, right? The four seasons change. You know, if we kind of take that into as an example, maybe we'll have easy time, you know, understanding at a very gross level, coarse level, I should say, what impermanence is. And then maybe we can just look it through our albums, you know, that we have the pictures of our parents and our grandparents and great-grandparents and great-great-great-great-grandparents, and you just go wherever you can go in the album. And you look at them, their life story in the album, right? Our great-grandparents, you know, they were born, the little baby, then they grew up and they were young and beautiful, and then, you know, whatever, all the things change, you know. And so, now that would be the same story of our life too, right? You know, there was a time we were just baby, and then we are teenager, and then we are young adult, and then we are, you know, middle age, and then we are old, and, you know, so it's the same process we go through, and that should also help us to, you know, understand impermanence. I mean, of course, we don't want to just kind of amuse ourselves and look at, you know, how their lives change. My great parents, you know, grandparents or great grandparents, how their lives change, you know. But we do that with some kind, you know, to be able to learn lesson for our own life. You know, they have been through that. They maybe successfully completed their life. Where am I? In what stage of my life? And how my life might change later on, right? In some way, we all share the same processes, you know, in terms of aging. So we learn that lesson, not just kind of amuse ourselves going through the albums. But the fact is that, you know, we have all these memories of our grandparents and great-grandparents, but where are they? They are no more with us, you know. So their life ended. Chapters are closed. So then what does that mean for us? That means a day will surely come that our life will come to an end and the chapters will close on our life as well. So if we know that one day our life will come to an end, you know, maybe sooner than later we could figure it out. So what that all means is that maybe there's not much time to do negativities. You know, maybe we should change the course of thinking and action, you know, because not much time is left really to do all kinds of negativities. So we think about like, okay, so there's not much time to do negativities and we better don't do negativities and get rid of the negativities that we have done.
Oh, yes.
And do the positive things and do more of the positive things. So we're stopping there today, and we would like to kind of remind you again that this afternoon at 1:30, we have a guest speaker, and he is Honorable, Mr. Pema Chinjur, honorable in the sense that he was a Tibetan cabinet minister before, and he served Tibetan communities in different capacities. So we have invited him to you know, to share his life experiences, which is related to Tibetan culture. Okay, we are not inviting him to give a Dharma teaching, so he's not giving Dharma teaching, just to make that clear to you. Okay, so he's not a Dharma teacher, he's not speaking on Dharma, but he's going to speak about his life experiences which are related to Tibet and Tibetan culture. And as many of you know, that Tibetan culture, you know, it promotes peace. And His Holiness the Dalai Lama, even in the struggle for Tibet, he has adopted non-violent approach. And the Tibetan government in exile in India has been following his approach. And Honorable Minister served many years in the Tibetan communities. So based on his experiences, he will talk about his life before, he escaped India a little bit, and then, you know, what he did in India, and maybe, and other things. Yeah, so Geshe-la, I would like to, encourage everybody, if you could, you know, attend this talk this afternoon at 1:30.
Class at 7:30.
So we are just giving you enough time, I mean, more than enough, I guess, you know, to have lunch, you know, and then you can come back, right? Refresh yourself and come back.
If you...
No, so he thinks really it would be very good if you could come and listen to him. Excuse me, there is a pink slip here. I have prayer request for people who are no more with us. Carlos Gonzalez and Leah Chodoro. Sorry for not saying the name right. And but two of them are no more with us, and we request for prayers for them and others. Let us dedicate our collective merit for the flourishing of Dharma, the source of benefits and happiness throughout the universe. May His Holiness the Dalai Lama and all other holy masters live long and be successful in fulfilling their visions, benefiting sentient beings. May spiritual communities throughout the world and spiritual practitioners from all traditions remain healthy, harmonious, and be successful in fulfilling their spiritual aspirations. May these and other world environments be free of all kinds of unwanted pains and problems, and beings find peace, happiness, prosperity, and spirituality. In short, we dedicate our merit for all kind mother sentient beings to be free from the fears and dangers of two types of mental obscuration, and may we all reach complete enlightened state quickly.
Jebana Jeju Je Jebanya Ba Me Ba Da. Pone Pondo Pevara Isho Tonyi Tawa Rembo Che Maje Pana Jiju Che Jeva Nyamba Me Pavata Pone Pondo Pevara Isho Kangri Rave Kove Shinkande Pena Dewa Mali Jumene Chere Sengwa Tenze Gyatsuyi Shabe Sinti Padu Tenyo Inje Saji Beji Juji Medo Jangri Ro Minji Nginde Kenpande Saji Jindu Mide Vuwa Yin Dukhi Namda Kinla Shiva Isho Idan Guru Rana Mante Lavani Antanya Amri.
So you can leave the cushions and chairs as they are, and enjoy your lunch, and hope to see you here.